Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we discuss some real news. Macron and others in Europe double down on sending forces to Ukraine. Meanwhile, Speaker Johnson will introduce a Ukraine aid bill. What's the end game? De facto partition of Ukraine? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we cross to Martin Jay. He is an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with George in Budapest. George, things are happening so fast. So many statements are being made now, many of them contradictory. But unity is always the most important thing here. We have Macron saying, if Russia wins, then trust in Europe will be reduced to zero. Then we have Sergeant Schultz in Germany reminding the French president, we're not at war with Russia. So can you somehow navigate between these proclamations from European leaders?
Well, it's not easy to do. What it seems like where we're heading is that the Europeans, which would be Macron, probably the British, the Poles, the Baltic Chihuahuas, as we like to refer to them, I think they're going to move some forces into Ukraine, not with a view to combat. I don't think they're not planning on any kind of combat, but I think that they want to somehow stabilize the Ukrainian front and make clear to Russia that thus far and no further. So I think they're going to accept the loss, as they see it, the loss of the eastern and southeastern provinces of Ukraine, that they're gone, but they're making clear to Russia that you cannot go any further. And that seems to be where they're kind of heading, that they're going to accept a de facto partition of Ukraine. And then the rest of Ukraine, the part of Ukraine that is within the sort of the Western sphere, that they're going to retreat as if it were the West Germany that emerged after World War II. I mean, that's, I think, where this is heading.
Do you think it's a foolish plan, George?
It may well be a foolish plan, but I think this is where they're thinking. It's not doable. Necessarily,
yeah, I mean,
but at least it's a way that temporarily they can bring it. There's not going to be a peace agreement. There's not going to be negotiations. There's not going to be any talks. But that's where they may think about where at least you can draw a line and say, okay, this is what we take. This is what you take. And then, you know, we don't actually have to get into a all-out war.
Well, you said that's their thinking. I would say they're not thinking. Before I chime in again, Martin, what's your reaction to all of this?
I more or less agree with what George says, but I think what we're looking at now is the 11th hour, 101st bluff of all bluffs, and also the 101st miscalculation. This is really the end game now. When you know, all my career, I've had to listen to Western media and Western elites harp on about various Middle Eastern factions using people as human shields. But actually, this is what we're talking about, isn't it? We're talking about actually sending our own soldiers there as human shields based on the massive miscalculation. These three words, let's remember these three words. Putin wouldn't dare. He will dare, and he will do it. And the second scenario to this, if it ever goes ahead, is a number of French or troops or Polish or Lithuanian troops will be killed. If they're French troops, if you have something like a small unit of a dozen men who are killed, that's endgame. That's all over from that point. That shuts down.
Martin, particularly since a recent poll out of France, that 68% of the people polled are against sending any kind of troops into Ukraine. Go ahead.
Yeah, but Macron thinks that he can get around that by saying, well, these troops wouldn't be infantry anyway. You know, they'd be trainers. There'll be some sort of consultants. You know, but the second point I wanted to make is that perhaps even worse than a dozen French troops being killed is a dozen French troops being captured. And we saw in Syria, French, Italian and Spanish governments easily giving in to terrorist groups who demanded roughly $8 million per head in hostages. That ain't going to wash with these guys. Putin's not interested in $8 million. So the nightmare scenarios are just multiple, and it's more than foolish. It's basically a suicide move.
Well, Georgia, is it a bluff? Because Macron, he seems to be really hyper interested in media exposure right now. He even said, the eventual return of Crimea. I mean, this is maximalist. I mean, that's an understatement. I mean, is it a bluff that the Russians wouldn't dare touch the hair of a Frenchman? I hope that's not what they're thinking. Go ahead, George.
It's hard to know. I mean, there is the model of Syria to consider, which is we now have had for years and years Russian forces in Syria. We've had American forces in Syria. We've had Turkish forces in Syria. I mean, all three have very different agendas in Syria. All three are essentially are antagonistic as far as Syria is concerned. Yet they do go out of their way not to shoot at each other. I mean, admittedly, the Americans under Trump did kill all those mercenaries, Russian mercenaries, and Russia didn't do anything about that. So that could be their thinking that, we can do something like Syria, in Ukraine, that basically we're not going to target each other and thus avoid a war. I thought it was interesting that Putin, in his interview last week with this Dmitry Kiselyov, and this issue was raised to him. Well, what do you think about the French moving their forces into Ukraine? And Putin really was quite non-committal. He said that, he didn't say, well, this is a red line for us, that means, this means war. He said, well, there've already been French forces in Ukraine. There's nothing new about that. And in any case, it's not going to change the outcome of the war. So it was a kind of ambiguous, but it did suggest that he didn't necessarily think that this is a game changer and that this means war and we're going to target French forces. So I don't know, but at the same time, even if you do target these forces, it's hard to invoke Article 5. I mean, you brought your forces into Ukraine, you violated obviously Article 1. I mean, there's no Article 5 involved, and I think that's a fool's errand. For Macron and the Poles or the Baltic Chihuahuas to say Article 5, Article 5, we've been shot at. I mean, that's not going to wash.
Well, I mean, the both of you know what Macron in his heart of hearts wants. He wants the Americans to go in, okay, under the flag of NATO. That's what they all want, okay? I mean, how many U-Hauls does Lithuania need to transport its kit, okay? I mean, I'm sure some medium-sized U-Hauls will all you'll need. Well, Martin, there's an interesting missing piece of the puzzle here. Are the Ukrainians supposed to go along with this? I haven't heard anything from Zelensky. I mean, we're just going to cut up your country, okay? They've been volunteers in this disastrous project from the beginning. I guess he won't have much choice, but I think that the radicals around him will not be satisfied with that. I'd be worried if I was Mr. Zelensky with all Macron's talk.
Yeah, but we're reaching real desperation levels now. I mean, really, really are scraping a barrel on both Zelensky's side and Western elites. What is left to do there? Zelensky may well be thinking, if they sent small numbers of troops to Ukraine, perhaps I could then force more of my troops that are working in the kitchens and the admin departments to put on uniforms and grab guns and go to the front line. Perhaps, it's difficult to know. But Peter, I'm inclined.
I would imagine, Martin, you would need to have bayonets behind those people to do that, okay, at this
Probably.
stage. Okay, I mean if you're calling the cooks and the clerks, that means you're losing really, really badly. I mean, why would anyone want to be put into that situation?
Zelensky's already calling in pregnant women, for God's sake. So, I mean, we are already there, but I think there's another side to this, and I think you touched on it earlier. Personally, if I had to really stick my neck out, I do think it's a bluff. I really do. I don't think this is serious. And the only way that I can imagine that Macron could be vaguely serious about this notion is he's thinking a bit like Biden, he's thinking in the past of what France was 30, 40 years ago, and he's possibly thinking of African troops, possibly. Now, that could be a way around this. We talked about Article 5.
Let me get clarify there. African troops fighting on the at the behest of the French in Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, they did it before in the Second World War, you know, where I am now in Morocco. There were plenty of Moroccan troops that fought in the Second World War. I'd like to say alongside the French, but they were treated so badly. They were given outdated, dysfunctional equipment, you know, barely the correct rations and not even the proper uniforms. But, you know, history could repeat itself. He may be thinking that way. He may be thinking that way, or he may be thinking mercenaries or Nazi, neo-Nazi
Well,
groups.
it's quite neo-colonial in appearances there. George, Speaker Johnson is thinking a standalone aid bill for Ukraine. You and I talked about this before. I think that's it's going to happen. It's just going to be the amount. That will be interesting, George.
No, I think that is going to happen. It was always unlikely that he's going to be able to hold the line against aid for Ukraine because there's such an overwhelming majority in both houses for sending money to Ukraine that he was always going to cave. I mean, on the, you know, you have on the one hand, pretty much everybody wants to give money to Ukraine, and on the other hand, you have these few MAGA Republicans or the Marjorie Taylor Greens and Matt Gaetzes. There just aren't enough of them. And it's really a freebie for the Americans. I mean, money, they have money to burn. Yeah, sure, send it along. Yeah, and by the way, let's confiscate $300 billion of assets from the Russians, send that along as well. So it's nothing to them. I mean, there's no pain there. I don't know whether it might end up with Johnson losing his job and they might vacate the chair, but he may want that. I mean, it's a thankless job. I mean, it's not a great, it's not that painful to be kicked out from the speakership.
Well, m your thoughts there, Martin, because I mean, this is all electioneering as well, okay? You know, they. Johnson has to be careful what the MAGA people feel, but he doesn't want to give a victory to Biden. So it's a pretty thin line for him.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about US politics. I was thinking more of European politics. Macron is thinking about his future, no question. He's going to be out of office in only 3 years' time, which is not a long time at all. He's probably positioning himself for a top job in Brussels, either European Commission President or European Council President. So I think there is politics in this. He's also, with these kind of statements, he's also bashing the far right groups in France. So there's a political agenda there, you know, because they
Yeah,
have.
well, you know, as we approach the break, I have a strong sense that people associated with this Ukraine project will end up being dismissed from polite society. We'll see. All right, gentlemen, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter LaBelle here. We're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to George. George, another angle to all of this here, you know, we look at the European leadership and we have elections coming up across the continent here. The powers that be, well, the incumbents are not sitting pretty, to say the very least here. But if you look at, you know, many of the things that Schultz and Tusk and Macron have said, and what we've heard over the last, I think, like 3 or 4 months now, the war economy. I mean, this is something that seems being pushed further and further and further. We have to mobilize, which of course that means rallying around the flag to some extent here. It's national security; you can't question it, and it's existential. Macron used that word many times over the last few days. Existential. This is very convenient. Oh, and by the way, get rid of freedom of speech, George.
No question. It is the most extraordinary escalation within Europe, and it's on the part of Macron. You hear the same sort of talk from Annalena Baerbock, the German foreign minister. Schultz is kind of saying that, well, I
He's
agree
trying
with
to
all
keep
of that.
up. He's just trying to
Exactly.
keep up.
Exactly. I agree with all of that, but I don't want to, send the tourist missiles. And then, of course, Macron and David Cameron sneeringly said to him, "Yeah, but that's what you said about the tanks. That's what you said about the missiles. So, what are you making a fuss about this?" And you have to think that, eventually he's going to cave. I mean, there isn't really any real basis. But it is extraordinary that the way with all of the current European elites are mobilizing for that war economy, and then now Macron has even said, okay, well, we're going to devote all these resources to get buying more Ammunition from all over the world. So that, so Macron has gone back on, he's saying, well, we've got to, everything has to be in terms of the European defense industry. Now says, all right, the hell with the European defense industry. We're just going to buy it wherever there's ammunition to be had. And they're now talking about, giving this money, this, at least as far as the Europeans goes, is this, the windfall profits from this frozen Russian assets. We're going to hand that over to Ukraine and they can buy whatever ammunition they want with that money. Now, the Americans say we should take the whole lot and give it all to Ukraine. The Europeans,
yeah, well,
saying,
because most of it's in Europe.
Exactly. But Europeans at the moment are saying no to that. But we know that eventually the Americans always get their way.
You know, in this kind of, this is like the European Union is struggling, to say the very least, its legitimacy, the promise of security and prosperity that's coming up short here. So the European Union, to take the next step, always needs a crisis. This is a very convenient crisis, okay? I don't think any of these people give a hoot about Ukraine one way or another, okay? This is a political gambit here. And also, it's Macron. You know, I think he's probably a very insecure guy. I don't know. I mean, but, he's trying to, show his inner Bonaparte or something like that. You know, he's trying to leave a mark. He wants to take the mantle of leadership. You know, this is something we see, when things aren't going well at home, focus on your Bonaparte. Okay. I think this is what part of this is about. And it's also a challenge to the rising influence of the members in the EU and of NATO in the East. Martin.
It is, and I think you're right. I think there's this political gesturing. He is banging on his own chest here, trying to show the Americans that he is dynamic, he can do things, he can arrange things. You know, he is a contender. But he's not convincing really anybody, because the French people aren't convinced of this latest ruse, to send troops to to Ukraine. And if you look at the statement, the French journalist, I mean, it was an interview with Le Parisien. And if you look at the translation, I actually speak French, and I was, when I read it, I thought, God, that's really lame. What he actually said was, perhaps at some point we may have to send troops into Ukraine, but I don't want it and I don't really, support it. And, it was very, very lame, but it's been blown up, by the press, by the international press. I don't know how long that can continue. There are only so many times you can play that bluff with media, before people wake up and realize, I'm a skeptical journalist. What I smell here is massive, unprecedented levels of corruption, which all elites, all Western elites, basically want to avoid coming out. And if we can keep Zelensky in power, if we can keep the war machine going for another 2 or 3 years, we'll basically be in the clear. That's really what the agenda is here. It's incredible how we keep sending money to this guy. Keep sending billions to this guy. And, it was just pointed out by somebody else the other day, probably smarter and more informed than I am, that this defense line that the Americans gave to Ukraine to build, involving hundreds of millions of dollars, similar to the Maginot line that the Russians have created, doesn't exist. So where did all that money go? And then you look at such things as the deficit of missiles. I'm told when things were really hot, when the war was in full swing a few months ago, in terms of exchange of hardware, military hardware, the Ukrainians were going through something like 6,000 155 millimeter rockets a day, which are supplied by America. Now, that's, do the maths, 180,000 a month. I'm told that the Americans actually only produce 30,000. So there's a huge, huge deficit to, probably half of that is being sent to the Israelis now. So we've got some real problems ahead. And I think all of this is really not so much framing how we accept defeat in Ukraine, present it to our electorates. It's more how we keep this thing going at all costs.
Well, that's exactly it, George. I mean, if you're sitting in the Kremlin right now and you're watching all of these, substandard Western politicians, I mean, how would you assess it? I mean, would you say we need to recalibrate or just continue? I mean, because I think it's undeniable. I think most people have come to the conclusion now that, Ukraine is losing, if not lost here. And so if you're sitting in the Kremlin, you're saying, well, why don't we just keep on doing what we're doing, George?
Well, except that the line that has come from Putin, and this was something that was Tucker Carlson emphasized after the interview, which is, Putin really wants a settlement. He really wants to bring this war to an end. And I think that's clear from, well, I mean, that was clear again from his interview with Kiselyov, that Russia really wants this war to come to an end. And that's why I'm just thinking that if the Europeans are, and the Americans obviously, are ready to accept some sort of a de facto partition of Ukraine, I'm not sure that Russia would say no to that. They haven't
Well,
achieved what
what
they
about
haven't
the...
achieved what the goals were at the start of the special military operation. On the other hand, is it worth continuing the war? I mean, that I think that's the question they would have to then ask.
I would be more nuanced, but I know where you're going, George. So, a partition, the rump state must be neutral, and there must be regime change in Kiev. Do you think the Russians would buy that?
I think they probably would buy that now. Yeah, I think they would say that we haven't achieved everything that we wanted to achieve, but what's the alternative? The alternative is
Well,
to
I mean,
keep
George,
going.
demilitarization, denazification, they were that's those are both pretty vague in a way, so you could say both were achieved. Martin, jump in.
Yeah, but are we ever going to denazify Ukraine? I can't see that ever happening. I think key to this, what you just alluded to, is regime change. So, again, I know I'm banging on and on, and I've written so many articles about this, but I think it does come down to Zelensky moving on to his very nice villa in Florida and accepting his American passport and letting everyone, let the grown-ups come in, and clear up the mess that the teenagers made, over the weekend when they were left the keys to the house.
That's not going to happen. Not going to
Go
happen.
ahead, George, go ahead.
Zelensky is much too useful to the Americans and to the Europeans. He's the ideal leader for them. I mean, he's been essentially presided over the devastation of his country. I mean, almost no other Ukrainian leader would have been happy to do that. He's not an independent actor. He's never has been an independent actor. He has done what was required of him. So there's no reason for the West to get rid of him, particularly as when I said that they're thinking in terms of a de facto partition, they're going to keep the war going. I mean, obviously, it's going to be a matter of going
But
back to
George,
the
you're missing something. You're missing a fundamental point. You're just missing it.
pre-Kerch situation, which is basically just going to keep it going. Like they were shooting at the Donbass from 2014 and 2022. That's what how they're going to continue going.
You're right, but the caveat to all that is, do you stick to your point when Russian troops are 20 kilometers outside of Kiev? This is what the nightmare
They're not
scenario.
20 kilometers outside
They're
Kiev. They're
not
nowhere
now,
near
but
20
they might
kilometers.
be, but they
They
will
might
be.
be, but they're not. I mean, you can't say that, well, what happens when they're 20 kilometers? They're not at the moment. We're talking
Because
right
that's the
now,
worry.
not
Because
what might happen.
the reason why is because that's the worry for people like Macron and Biden, is that if
And that's why
Russia
they're
passes.
saying we're going to move our forces in and say that, thus far and no further, you're not coming anywhere near Kiev. That's what it's all about, why they want to move their forces in. You're not coming in. Now, does Russia really want to take that risk of essentially, possibly getting into a shooting war with the Western powers? I don't think so, and that's why what I brought up earlier, the example of Syria, they've kept their distances. Make sure we don't get into a situation where we're
Yeah,
shooting
but
at them.
look, Syria is a
Okay,
lousy
but
example.
there's one problem, one major
Syria,
problem.
so, sorry,
Hang
Syria
on,
is a lousy.
hang on. One major problem with that, and George, you and I have been over this territory many times, is that Russia will not accept a situation where NATO will just retool the Kiev regime and they start all over again in 5 years. That will be something that they will be intolerable. Martin.
Yeah, it's the Syria example isn't a very good one. I've worked in Syria, and I can tell you that a couple of thousand US troops in the vast country, the vast desert of Syria, in little tiny strategic corners, training local Al-Qaeda groups, which are happy to take the money and fight Assad regime forces every now and again, is a really poor parallel, a really poor example to
Really,
NATO
because the
troops.
Americans aren't going to have a huge forces. We're not talking about, I mean, that's what Macron has
Yeah, I
said,
know, but
limited number of forces.
Putin is not Assad. It's a lousy example. It's a lousy.
No, because there's still a limited number of forces, and there's no indication that the Russians are willing to shoot at and kill NATO forces. There's just no indication. I mean, the Russia has been very meticulous about not getting into any situation where they're shooting at NATO forces. That's why the
Oh, they have
parallel is
killed, but
exact.
they have killed NATO troops.
Mercenaries.
Okay.
Mercenaries.
Contractors. Okay. Whatever status there was. Gentlemen, it just started getting heated up, but we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.